library, I went through the files of everybody who was active in the late 60s, just about 700 players. And I have to tell you what attracted me to your career. I'm working on two books at once. One's about changes in relationships between players and the owners in the late 60s, and the other is a novel set at Fenway Park and set in the bullpen.
There you go.
Where I know you spent a lot of time.
I got my doctors out there.
And at that one of the big themes of the novel is the relationship between the Red Sox and their fans, and all this, the burden of history. And of course, you, more than anybody else I came across, your whole life has been tied to the Red Sox.
Yeah, I was brought up a Red Sox fan, you know. Being brought up here in the Boston area, it's everybody's dream to be a major league ball player, but then to make it in your hometown is something else. But I've had a lot of thrills in my life, but I still say the biggest thrill I had was the first old-timers game they had in Boston, because they didn't have one right away. It took 10 years or 12 years. And the day before, we had a Jimmy Fund banquet, a lunch, and there was about 1,000 people. And I was sitting up the head table, and I looked down the table, and there was Ted Williams, Bobby Doyle, Pesky. I mean, when I was growing up, I was outside the screen, you know, trying to get these guys. Now they're my best friends. So, you know, I looked down at the table and said, geez, you know, I'm up here and I belong with these guys. I mean, not with their statistics, but with teammates and friends. And it was just really hit home.
Is that what kept you going in the minors all those years? I read that you would have quit if they had sent you to another organization.
I don't think I would have quit. I thought of quitting one time, and that was when I met Dick Williams. I had just gotten married.
In Toronto.
Yeah. I had had a good year the year before, and nobody with the Sox had a good year. And I was the last one cut by the Red Sox. And Pesky, to this day, says it was the toughest thing he had to do, you know. And he said he'd get me back, just go down there. And in those days, we used to train at Scottsdale, so I had a five-day drive down to Florida. So by the time I got there, I just thought about things. And I first met Dick Williams. I said, Dick, you know, I think I'm going to give it up. I said, if I can't make it this year, I'll never make it. So he said, why don't you stick with me? He said, my first year, he said, come with me and be a playing coach. And he said, you know, if I go to majors, I'll give you a shot as a player. If not, you come as a coach with me. So he said, don't rush. Go play golf a couple of days and think about it. So that guy didn't want to leave. I was having fun. And where else can you make that kind of money and have fun? You know? So I told him I'd do it. And thank heaven I did. 2 years later, I was in the World Series. But that's the only time. But I love the Red Sox. The man that signed me was a farm director, Neil Mahoney. And you couldn't ask for a better man than Mr. Yawkey.
Did you know Yawkey well?
Real well, but I knew him well enough that, he'd always be in the clubhouse, say hi to you. And first year, he ripped up my contract and almost doubled it. So, you know, that was... He used to sit up there during batting practice until the gates opened up. And the people came in, and Dick said, Mr. Yawkey wanted to see you one day, so I went up, and he said, you know, you're doing a great job for us, and I really appreciate it. And he said, my secretary has got a contract I think he'd like. So. But he was just a fine gentleman and great for the game of baseball.
I want to talk about my 16th birthday. It was your major league debut.
Yankee Stadium.
Hell of a game, wasn't it?
Oh, geez, it's a tough one to forget. all around, because my first game, I went 2-for-4 at Whitey Ford, and then catching Billy Rohr, he struck out Howard in a 2-2 pitch. The guy called the ball, and then Ellie got a base hit. But it was quite a thrill for
who
both
was the
of
umpire?
Us. I don't know. I didn't get that good a memory.
Yastrzemski made that catch.
Unbelievable. When he Tresh hit that, I said, well, that's the end of that, no hitter, you know. And when he came up with that, I just couldn't believe it. It's probably one of the best catches I ever saw. But
I've only read about it.
I've seen it 1,000 times.
And
it gets better, yeah.
Or,
both
on screen.
Ways.
Yeah.
Both ways, yeah.
Is that World Series is probably a bigger your biggest thrill, right? Or was that game?
I don't know. It was just the whole thing, you know. It was everything put at once. Like, they had a Russ Gibson Day up there in Fenway that year, and that was quite a thrill. And people from Fall River gave me a car, and there was thousands of them up there that day. And you know, the close pennant race, and it was a thrill playing in the World Series, but I think it was sort of anticlimactic, you know, for the whole year. It was one of those we definitely wanted to win, and I think if Lonnie had a couple of days rest, we would have won. But, you know, when it was over, we could sit there and say, boys, we gave it the best we got. Because I don't think we had the best club in the American League, never mind the series.
Detroit, huh?
Minnesota had a great ball club. Detroit was tough. I'd say between both of them, I thought maybe, you know, Minnesota had the best ball club, but Detroit was. You know, it wasn't that we were so much better, and everybody expected us to fold because we were all young, you know. Well, young as far as the major leagues went, but
right.
It was the other guys that folded.
And Smith and Scott. Were just
yeah,
coming in.
Mike Andrews, myself, Joe Foy.
Right.
So we had a bunch of young guys, but we were used to winning all the time. We didn't know we were supposed to lose. So. And then Dick Williams, I mean, he put it, everything was there. It was just, took somebody to put it together, and he was the man that did it. He was a great manager. I think he proved that after what he did with us. He went to Oakland and won three times out there, and went to Montreal and made them a contender, and then he proved it. When he won with that team he had in San Diego, that was a magician's trick there.
I agree.
But it just proves what... I got traded to the Giants. I played my last 3 years out there. And the first year out there we had the same team, but we must have left 300 guys on second base. The next year we started moving a guy over, not because of the manager. You know, we talked amongst ourselves. We had Willie Mays and everybody. We started moving a guy over and we won the Western Division. It's that simple.
Yeah.
You know, if you pick up those runs, and that's what Dick Williams, he was a firm believer. You get the run no matter what the score is, you know.
Was it tough getting traded away from the Sox?
Yeah, it was. It was sort of a mess. You know, Dick got fired, and quite a few of the guys that came with him got traded. I was fortunate enough, I was well-liked enough that they got me with a good ball club, because I ended up playing with the two best owners in baseball. I had Horace Stoneham out there in Frisco. So it ended up being great. I lived out in Frisco for 10 years. I loved it.
Beautiful city.
Oh, it was.
You had the misfortune to run into Dick Dietz's career.
That's my man. Yes. Oh, that's my roommate. He's the greatest guy. Great. I had the two best roommates. Mike Andrews with the Sox and Dick Dietz.
I'm hoping to talk to Mike Andrews tomorrow. I've got to call him later on today.
He's a great guy. He's a first-class actor. He does a tremendous job with the Jimmy Fund. And that's, we all take part in the Jimmy Fund. And Mike's just a tremendous guy, and he's best roommate you could ask for. My other roommate, the Dick Dietz, we used to call him the Mule.
He kept you on the bench, though.
Oh, that's all right. It was worth it with him. He couldn't catch, but boy, could he hit. That was a tough job out there, because if it was a 1-0, a 2-1 game in the eighth or ninth inning, the phone would ring, and I'd have to go in and catch the eighth or ninth inning, you know. And that's pretty tough when you've been sitting, especially in Candlestick, when you've been sitting out.
Yeah,
really. About a 300 mile an hour wind blowing. But that was a thrill playing with, you know, Marichal and Perry and McCovey and Mays. We had a good bunch of guys. It's a different game, though, you know, than playing back here. I mean, you'd have 5,000 people in a game and 10,000 here. We never played less than 30,000, you know. And the fans are just tremendous back here.
What do you think will happen when they have to abandon Fenway?
I think it'll definitely they'll have to have a good ball club. I think they're going to have to, and I think they're going to probably do it in the very near future myself.
Yeah.
But they've just outgrown it, and now that the Yorkies have both passed away, I think it's time to move. And you know, everybody's building a good building a new stadium. Look at Baltimore. You know, they're having a great year down there. What a beautiful stadium. So I think they're going to have to move to a bigger stadium so they can get more people in. I'll tell you, they're going to have put something together a little better than they are this year, that's for sure. It's a shame the way things are going, you know. With this being the 25th reunion of the 67 team, seems like we have something every other week, you know, either a golf tournament or a banquet or something, so we've been having fun.
Do the fellows from that team, you glory in winning the pennant more than the disappointment of the series, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The people around here, the way they act, you think you won the World Series. Believe me, I mean, everybody knows who you are, and they're always patting you on the back, and it was the greatest year we ever had, and everything else, so they don't forget, and we don't. There's quite a few of us still live around here, so we get together quite often. Every time we do, we raise our average 10 points, so I'm close to 300 now.
Are you getting there?
Yeah.
I'm focusing a lot on 69 and the spring training boycott. I don't know how well you remember the rolled-out boycott that winter, but I'm sort of focusing on that as the foundation for the Players Association getting its sense of purpose.
That was really tough. The one thing I can remember about that is I bumped into Bobby Doerr because I was staying out with the rest of them, and I bumped into Bobby Doerr, and I said, "Bobby, what do you think I should do?" I said, "You know, I want to stay with the guys and everything." He says, "Gibby, you know, I'd do it if I were you." He says, "The only thing I could tell you is, I got two young kids. These other guys are pretty sure are their jobs, the guys that are out." He says, "You know, you got two young kids, Fisk and Moses were the two kids." He says, and they're looking pretty good out there, and the guy, he says, it's a tough decision on your part. He says, if I were you, he says, I'd explain to Lonnie, and he was a player rep, you know, that you got a job to fight for and a life to live, and, you know, so I made a decision. That I talked to Lonnie, and he says, sure, go ahead, back, you know, and they settled it that night, so I didn't have to be... It's a tough decision. I was in on two of them. I was the player rep in the Giants when they went on strike in 70.
How do you know that?
Well, I wasn't the player rep, but
alternate.
Neither one. Mays and Perry were the rep and player rep, and we were supposed to send two guys down to Houston, each club, for a meeting to decide. So they wouldn't go. Don't ask me why, but they said they're not going. So the team took a vote, and it was unanimous. Everybody wanted me to go. I said, I'm not going. And that's a kiss of death, you know? So anyways, I ended up being the one to represent the Giants and went down there. So I had to come back and tell them to pack up the bag and go home, you know?
What was that like?
Tough. It really was. Not so much for me, and sure it was tough for me, but by that stage I had, you know, I got my pension in, and I knew I was going to be around for a year or two.
Years, yeah.
And but to look at some of those kids, and you know, to just start, and what do we do? And I says, you better go home and get a job. I said, this one don't look too good. So I said, I had a job at the time with Bank of America, so I said, I'm going to go back to work and work out every day. So we split it up where one player was in charge of five, and he'd call and let them know what was happening and everything. But boy, I used to get phone calls all the time from the younger guys. What do you think? What do you think? Keep your job, I'd say. Keep your job.
It's a tough spot, isn't it? I mean, a baseball career is fragile to begin with.
Oh, yeah. It's. And, we were very fortunate to have Marvin Miller. I mean, he was that guy could talk you. He could talk you out of anything, or talk you into anything. Either way, he was quite a man, and he did a lot for the baseball.
I interviewed him, and he's still, yes, in New York in March.
Boy,
he's still sharp and very persuasive.
Oh, every time I talk to him, I zip my wallet up and button my pocket, you know. Geez, I'm afraid this guy's going to talk me out of it. Yeah, he's a good man.
Was it, now the Red Sox, of course, had the reputation of being treated better by their owner than anybody, and I think pretty certain that Yawkey was the most generous owner. Did that make it tougher on the Red Sox as a group to stand against the owners?
No.
Did Yawkey understand?
Yeah, because I know, it was 68, I think. We got Ray Culp from Philly. And Culpy had a couple, many good years over there. He was here 1 year, and he doubled his contract. And same thing with Siebert come over. And, you know, Mr. Yawkey paid you what you're worth. You know, like, I think I've been asked 1,000 times, does it bother you with the money these guys are making now? And it doesn't, because when I played, I was paid what I thought I should be. And I was lucky enough to have a great owner, you know, and I was having fun, nobody on our club, you know, went around this. Nowadays, if a guy makes $1 million, the next guy wants $1.1 million, you know. In those days, God bless you, you know, you knew Yaz was, you wanted to get in there before Yaz signed so there'd be some money left, you know. But he deserved every penny he got. And Mr. Yawkey did pay his players a lot better. Because I know when they were going to trade me, I had a shot of going to Minnesota. And he said, you don't really want to go there, do you? I said, no, that might force my retirement right there. Because that guy, he wasn't too well at paying his ball players over there. Griffith.
Yeah.
Griffith was tough. But Horace Stoneham was good. He was a good man, and so I was really fortunate. I worked hard to get there, and once I got there, it was just as much fun as you'd expected, you know.
What was the hardest part for you? Hitting?
Yeah, hitting, but not simply because of hitting. The toughest part was. And I proved it, I think, in 68, or maybe 69. I think it was 68. I played for about a month straight, and I was hitting over 300. You know, and I remember a couple of guys did write-ups on me for the Boston papers on what had happened. What had happened is I was playing every day. I mean, there's nothing tougher than